This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy? Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I have a very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are now, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here. 49ers Plus Minus episode, Super Bowl edition. I am not in Las Vegas yet. I am delaying this as long as possible. But Matt Barrows, well, you've been there for like a 3 weeks now, something like that, 7 weeks. Co-hosting from the media hotel, bathed in golden light on my screen. Barrows, how's that Super Bowl week been so far?
I'll tell you what, it started out very slowly. We arrived to rain and sort of yucky weather. And I'm sure a lot of people who were coming in from northern climes, from Canada or from wherever, were disappointed in the Vegas weather. But it's gotten nicer, and yesterday, really, the crowd arrived. I mean, there are a lot of people on the Strip. There are a lot of people in the hotel. I'm seeing all sorts of celebrities. I saw Josh Johnson yesterday.
There you go.
And then
there
I saw Carrot Top right after that. And then I saw Don Cheadle. Don Cheadle in Vegas. So if we lose power during the game, again, we know who to blame. Don Cheadle has brought another little pinch that he uses to briefly black out the power.
Right. Here speaking in the Cockney, was he speaking in the Cockney accent in Vegas?
He was dressed in a Cockney way. He had a little beret on or a little Kangol hat. I didn't stop to talk to him, but he was actually at the Luxor, and I thought that was pretty cool. It kind of helps out the cachet of this hotel a little bit.
You're dangerously close to assembling like the Barrows 11. Like you could plot out some heist. I think Carrot Top, he's your inside guy. You got Cheadle. Oh, you got, this is lining up.
I've got Beast Mode here too. I've got Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch and Josh Johnson are here as a duo. They're having foundation function, or maybe they had it last night. But yeah, we got some pretty interesting personalities to assemble here.
Well, there's also a football game. There's been some interesting, as always in a Super Bowl, there are little intriguing little quirks and anecdotes and moments. But the big one all week's been that practice field. I know they're not letting you out there, but we've heard, you know, they laid down turf over the UNLV artificial field, and it hasn't seemed to come in. There's squishy or bouncy or whatever you call it. Clearly, the 49ers don't think it's ideal. It's not ideal. But what's your sense of what they're doing about it? Like, are they having to back off for practice? I think today is supposed to be the fastest practice. But where are they on this practice field controversy while the Chiefs practice in the palatial fields of the Raiders HQ?
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting that in the pool report from the Chiefs, which is done by Peter King, Andy Reid took time to lavish praise about the Raiders facility. and just how roomy it was and how it was done to done to the nines, and that they'll never outgrow it. What a lovely facility they have there in Henderson. And that's in stark contrast to UNLV, where the 49ers are. They all said that it was a, I don't want to say half speed practice, but the verb or the adjective that was given to me was a joggy practice, where you are not going 100 miles an hour. And so that's not all that different than their regular Wednesday sessions. It's not usually a full practice on Wednesday. The Thursday practice is. The Thursday practice is the most game-like of the week. And they sort of dodged around the question about whether Thursday would be a usual Thursday practice on this squishier, very MetLife stadium. And it's not artificial, but it's the squishiness, it's the softness of the field that literally is in the same range that MetLife was when they played there in 2020. And so that's the crux of the situation. The NFL, in trying to calm the 49ers down, trying to reassure the 49ers, said, hey, it's still in our safety parameters. It's right here where MetLife Stadium is. And of course, that only threw more fuel onto the fire. And
their most hated field, no question. Took out Bosa, took out various other Jimmy, right? Garoppolo, and was it Mostert? I can't remember. Like three guys went down in week two of 3 years ago on that field. So that's not the way to calm the 49ers down. Did you hear any like potentially drastic alteration? Like were they possibly going to say, you know what, let's just go practice at the Raiders place, because, you know, we need equality on the field. Was there any chance that the 49ers did something other than practice at UNLV and just make do on those fields?
Well, the initial threat, when it was really bad, it's gotten a little bit better over time. You know, they made a big stink about it. And so the league has tried to correct the issue a little bit. And it's gotten a little bit better. The hardness scale has gotten higher since last week, say. But yeah, at one point they threatened to attend media day on Monday and then fly right back to Santa Clara and practice at Santa Clara throughout the week, and then just come back for Sunday's game like it was a regular road trip, which for you and me would have been awesome. I was still stuck at San Jose Airport for 3 hours at that point, and I was like, okay, maybe I won't even have to get on a plane at all. There had been talk about sharing the Raiders facility with the Chiefs, and I'm not 100% on this reporting, but I think there was a back and forth, at least through the NFL, where the 49ers said, hey, if the Chiefs, alter their schedule a little bit, we could do this. The Chiefs were unwilling to do that, and the NFL was unwilling to force them to do that. So the only way that the 49ers could have used the Raiders facility was to have very early practices, which would have, you know, thrown into the air their whole practice schedule, everything that they had done last week. It wasn't worth it to them. So, I mean, that sort of tells you where things are, that they're able to sort of kind of swallow this UNLV place. That's the lesser of the two evils versus going to the Raiders and practicing very early in the morning, a lot differently than their normal schedule is.
I'll just say the idea of blowing off 3 days of media, going home and do it, there's no way. There was no way the NFL would have allowed that. And if the 49ers had done it, they would have gotten the most massive fine in the history of football. You can't do that. I get what they were mad. I get why they might have threatened to do that. They would have added two flights, by the way, to this, the wear and tear, the equipment. I get they were mad, but it does tell you how mad they were that they were even bringing that up. But there was no way the NFL would have allowed that. They would have gone, they would have might have taken draft picks from the 49ers if they'd done that. They might have taken a ton of draft picks if the 49ers had done that. So probably was not possible. I did think they could have gone to the Raiders HQ. It would have been schedule weirdness. I get it. They have to make do. But, okay, Barros, do you think they're compromised here? I mean, is this a real thing that might play into what we see on Sunday?
Let me just add one more element to it. They sent out an advance party to look at the field, like you would. The problem was that the field wasn't there when the advance party was out in Vegas. They only started to put it down last week when I was doing that story about, you know, 10 items about the upcoming Super Bowl for the 49ers. And I mentioned that the 49ers are practicing at UNLV. It was just starting to go down at that point. That was last week. That was midweek last week. So there wasn't anything for them to test. And so when the big guns, the head groundskeeper, the head medical guy, Ben Peterson, and some other top officials went out there, and they decided that it was not adequate. At that point, John Lynch made a special trip to Las Vegas to test it himself. So the GM had to go out there and test it. John Lynch put on cleats and pretended
When were those visits?
I think that those were this weekend, this previous weekend. And so that's when it really got tense. And that's when Jed York got involved. Jed York got on the phone with Roger Goodell. And that's when the league decided, okay, this is still within our safety parameters. When we do our tests, yeah, it's at the very bottom of the range. Yes, the 49ers like those numbers at the top of that range, but we're not going to do anything about it.
That is the amazing. Why wait so long to put that field down is amazing to me. We know it was going to take some time. We know they weren't putting the sod down. The NFL is making billions of dollars. This is their stage. This is their moment. There's going to be 250 million people watching this game, and they compromise one of the teams by putting down the field too late. Like that's, it just takes put it down a week earlier. I don't understand, but this is what they do with these, you know, fields. They have this incredible product, and they jeopardize it all. MetLife Field jeopardizes their players every time they play on it. So I could go on a rant on this forever, but I can imagine how pissed off the 49ers were and are right now. And we'll see what happens in the game. You know, I can't imagine they're going to say, yeah, sure, Trent, go out there and work as hard as you can on that field today. There's no way. Bosa. McCaffrey probably will do it anyway, but like, yeah, can you imagine if there's an injury on this field? I would imagine they're going to do whatever they can to avoid that risk, but we shall see. Maybe it gives them a little edge, right? A little mental edge, right? A little anger going into this game. Maybe not a terrible thing. I'll just say, just judging from afar, watching a lot of these media things, they do look loose, Barros. They do look like, especially the quarterback, I thought Purdy just looked like really relaxed, smiling, beaming. He's like answering everything. I don't know how much you've been around him or been around. Kyle looks loose. He looked really loose on Monday night, Barrows. Like really loose.
Almost a little too loose. Yeah.
It's like borderline on that scale of the other side. What's your sense of like the top guys, Shanahan, Purdy, other guys? What's the 49ers mindset in Vegas right now?
Yeah, Purdy leapt out to me as well. Yesterday, he had to do not just sort of one of those booth interviews. He was on stage in front of the whole NFL media, everybody who had gone out to the 49ers hotel. And he had to kind of handle, you know, the questions from the crowd, the microphone questions. And they're, you know, they're from French reporters and German reporters and Mexican reporters and all sorts of different oddball questions coming at him. And you're right, he seemed perfectly comfortable. I mean, he was even kind of cracking jokes up there. Yeah. It's something I'd never heard of. Apparently he does impressions. That was news to me. And that was also news to a lot of his teammates as well. So I don't know how prevalently those impressions have been. But I mean, it was like he was opening for Carrot Top on stage.
you're stuck on Carrot Top.
I know. That's my point. And I do remember 4 years ago thinking that Jimmy Garoppolo was a little tight in those situations.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And Brock Purdy wasn't. And I'm not saying that means that Brock Purdy's going to be Mr. Loose and totally comfortable under those Clegg lights on Sunday. That's going to be a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure on a young guy. The third youngest guy to ever start a Super Bowl, by the way. But to this point, he's handled everything with aplomb. He handled a do you think you look like Lee Harvey Oswald question the other day. He tried to answer it. I mean, that's how earnest he's trying to be, and then decided, you know what, this is just not an answerable question.
Maybe don't go down that road. Yeah, he's been looser there than he is with us, which is interesting. You know, a local press conference, you know what, we all understand he's not going to be the most colorful guy ever when he's at the podium. He's fine by, you know, one-on-one, but not in that stage. He kind of, you know, he repeats a lot of things that are important to him, but he doesn't go beyond that. I just think he's, something's happened where he was either ready for this or he just likes it. He feels like this is, it's been very interesting to watch. And yeah, I might write about this going, what this means for the game. I don't know, like comparison, I think playing style comparison to Jimmy, I'm not going to try to go press conference style to Jimmy, but we've just seen a bigger platform quarterback. We just see a quarterback, I think, who maybe is built for these kind of things. Now, he hadn't been great in the playoffs, but he's been great at the end of these playoff games. And what was Jimmy? He was handing the ball off for two NFC playoff games in 19. And then when they needed him to throw, I looked at the stat, he was 2 for 9 once the Chiefs scored that touchdown to get within 3 in the fourth quarter with an interception. And it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't anything good. I think it was 0 for 3 on third down or wherever it was. Like, this was not a big moment quarterback for them. And maybe Purdy is. I don't want to read too much into smiling on the podium, but I'm going to read a little bit into it. Any other things that have come from the media stuff, from anything you've bumped into that might tell us a little more about this game coming up?
Well, I can say that the 49ers' public face about the practice fields is different than what I'm hearing behind the scenes, that they don't want the players to see this as a big deal. They want the players to have as normal a practice week as possible. So you could tell on Monday when all of this was really starting to boil over that someone had told them not to talk about the practice fields because you got an immediately sort of a tense up situation whenever that came up. And the answer, at least the players that I talked to, was a quick, that's not my jurisdiction. You have to talk to somebody else about the practice fields. So, I agree with you. I mean, I think it's something that the 49ers can use to their advantage in the end by saying, look, you know, the Chiefs are the darling of the NFL. They give them this Taj Mahal practice facility. They stick you out here at these makeshift fields. We're the ones that are having to go back and forth to Las Vegas every day, which, by the way, is not an easy commute when everybody has descended on Las Vegas. I mean, it can be over an hour commute. So the 49ers have the more kind of difficult week-long situation. That would be a nice way, you know, you don't want to overplay that, but, everybody wants Taylor Swift and the Chiefs to win, and you guys can be the spoilers here.
How is that Lake Las Vegas hotel set up? And does it feel like isolated?
Yes, very much so. To the point where there was a report, and I think it was a bogus report, of a NFL player is bitten by coyote at Lake Las Vegas. And you believed it because it's out. It's out in the hills. There's nothing out there with it. It didn't seem so far-fetched. The hotel is very ordinary. I mean, it's not a Ritz-Carlton by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's the allure is that it's big enough. It has this separate space where they can do all this media, and it's away from the strip so that they're not here with just, I tell you, it's gotten really, really packed with people the last couple of days. So it's an isolated spot. It should be a good spot to sort of hunker down and get ready, but it's certainly not anything that they're really used to as far as hotels and getting ready for games.
I'm coming in Friday, so I got my people. Like, you know, I'm like when the super high roller comes in and they meet him at the jet and they usher him in. They have a big limousine ready. That's going to be me tomorrow morning. Las Vegas will be prepared for me. It's my welcome back. I hadn't been there for a while. This is me coming in. Oh, the Luxor. I don't really know the Luxor too well. So we'll see how that goes. But it will be. Las Vegas coming up to greet me, I am quite sure. What do you see as the 49ers issues? Like, do they have pressing issues going into this game? Like, things that they're discussing, things that you know are on their minds, as other than, let's say, you know, obviously defending Patrick Mahomes, but maybe it's that defending Patrick Mahomes from, you know, we know about that blowout loss 2 years ago. What's topical football-wise for them?
Well, I mean, topical football-wise is this weird fact that they had to lecture the team about effort after the Detroit game. I mean, Steve Wilks brought it up last week. John Lynch brought it up last week. Kyle Shanahan's been bringing it up, which is so strange to me that that's maybe a preseason thing that you do. Hey, I noticed in this practice you guys weren't hustling down the line. We got to correct that. That's not something you do after the NFC Championship game. So that to me is really the big question going into this game. The 49ers, we've seen them summon this incredible energy at various points during the season. Most recently when they went to Philadelphia, which I call their regular season Super Bowl. And so they went into the regular season Super Bowl prepared. I mean, they wore the funereal clothing to begin that game, came in all dressed in black for what would be the Eagles' wake, and so they galvanized and everybody in sync, and then they just haven't been able to cobble together a game like that since. And you would have thought they could have done that for Green Bay. Okay, if not Green Bay, we need a game to kind of get back into the flow of things. We'll do it for Detroit, and it wasn't Detroit either. So it's obviously something that you just can't snap your fingers and get. And I just wonder if that's going to be an issue at the beginning of the Chiefs game as well.
It's wild. Now you come out of the NFC playoffs as the NFC champion and you're going, well, we could play harder. There's plays that we didn't look real good. So much of it is focused on Chase Young, that one play that it looked really bad, and maybe a couple others, certainly in the first half. But there were others, and it wasn't just him. How's he felt? I mean, I know he's not the most talkative guy in the world, but has he felt the focus of this? Is he like, oh, wait a minute here, I got to play harder? Or has it come off in any other way when the focus has been directly on Chase Young on this effort thing?
Yeah, he commented on it certainly on Monday, and he said exactly that yeah, there are plays that you know, I just have to be more consistent, play really hard every play. The 49ers have sort of backed him and have noted that, okay, overall his game has been really good. Well, maybe not really good, but better than the public perception of it. And I think that's true. You know, I go back and rewatch these games, and you and I are kind of talking about Chase Young in the press box. And I rewatch it the next day, and I think, okay, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was. Okay, he got pressure here. And he made a couple of really nice individual stops, even on the outside stuff where that he's been criticized for. He's looked pretty good. So, he's still their second best defensive end. I think that this is a signal to this team in the offseason that, okay, this is two straight years where we've sort of kind of cobbled together a pairing for Nick Bosa that doesn't really work or doesn't work as well as it should. And I think that should be apparent that they need to bring in somebody good at that second spot. They can't go cheapy on it like they've done. So, you know, but that's a question for the 2024 offseason. I think he's going to be fine in this game coming up.
Think the pass defense is going to be fine going up against Mahomes. It's a limited receiving core, but has looked pretty decent in the postseason. Is that a matchup you like for the 49ers?
Yeah, that's a story I wrote about today. And remember when Mahomes came into Levi's last year in week 7, he just lit them up. Yep. 423 yards. It was the most yards that Charvarius Ward, when he was targeted, has given up since he joined the 49ers. His worst game as a 49er came against his old team, the Chiefs. And so I think he's really eager to make amends for that. There were some extenuating circumstances in that game. He was dealing with some pretty heavy personal issues. Remember, the game that preceded that was the Falcons game in Atlanta, where they just got beat up. Yeah. Literally, they got pushed around by the Falcons. They came out of that game really injured, and Charvarius Ward was one of those guys. He had a groin injury, didn't practice during the week. Probably shouldn't have played, but it was his old team. He pushed himself to play. He wasn't ready, and he paid the price. And so he wasn't really Charvarius Ward, and certainly D'Amador Lenore wasn't the D'Amador Lenore that we started to see in the playoffs last year, and who I think has been probably the most underrated guy on this entire squad. And has been playing really well in the playoffs. So I think those two guys are going to be fine. It's Mr. Number 3, Ambry Thomas, that is the question mark. And whether I think the Chiefs will certainly target him, but will the 49ers, knowing that Ambry Thomas is going to be targeted, be able to do something beyond what they've done in the first two games?
Didn't Logan Ryan play a lot of slot in the last game? And could you see Logan Ryan just jumping over Ambry Thomas? I mean, I don't think the Chiefs have that many guys you're worried about the speed issue with Logan Ryan. So maybe could that be the switch?
It's a great call. I mean, you would have a safety doing a lot of the kind of at least Travis Kelce kind of awareness. Where is Kelce on this play? And you would have a safety doing that and a veteran safety at that. So yeah, that could be a really interesting thing to watch, especially in pregames when we're trying to figure out who's going to be playing and whatnot. I think the Chiefs will probably be doing the same thing as we are. But yeah, it would allow you to get a 33-year-old former Super Bowl champion on the team or on the field and get Ambry Thomas off the field.
The other side, I'm looking at, I mean, I've talked about Purdy. I think he's relaxed, but we know the Chiefs are very good against the pass and they're not very good against the run. It's like still mystified why the Ravens didn't run it more in the AFC Championship game. Looking at McCaffrey, we know that was his the regular season game against the Chiefs was his first game of the 49ers. Just been traded like 2 days before. Can't really figure out that based on that matchup, but can you see a lot of Christian McCaffrey in this game? 20, 25 carries, you know, full dose, you know, Shanahan going for 30 carries in this game. Or do you think they keep throwing? They've been throwing a lot in the playoff. I'm going to write about this. They've been throwing a lot in these two playoff games. You know, just a very different kind of Shanahan attack. They've been behind, but still they've been throwing it way more than, you know, Shanahan usually does. You think they go back to running the ball in this one?
I mean, it would help everybody. It would help Purdy most of all. You would get those linebackers to come up. I mean, that's where Purdy runs into issues is when it's a soft coverage, when the team, the defense that he's facing isn't worried about the run and they're dropping those linebackers back into coverage. And those windows, always tight, get, you know, they just disappear altogether for him. So, yeah, I think that would help. That would help in so many ways. I mean, you know, you're talking about who's ready, who's going to kind of rise to the occasion. Christian McCaffrey's got to be at the top of your list. I mean, he's just built for this. He's been so ready these last two games. Remember that Philadelphia game last year, even when all hope was lost, he was still running really hard and running over Eagles. This guy wants to be in this game. This guy's been dreaming about this scenario all of his life. Yeah, this could be a real spotlight, a place where Christian McCaffrey, who's already extremely highly regarded, takes it to an even higher level.
Yeah, if I, you know, the winning quarterback almost always gets the MVP. We know that unless he has a bad game and or there's a guy gets two interceptions on defense, whatever. But if the 49ers win, I think McCaffrey might be my favorite to win MVP. And well, depending if Purdy throws three touchdowns, it's going to be Purdy. But I guess like this does seem built for Christian McCaffrey, kind of, you know, 26, 24 carries, 121 long touchdown, bunch of great, you know, big first down runs. Five catches, 80 yards, like one of those kind of games that's just impossible to match up with against a big pass rush, against a team that, you know, plays the outside very well. Just dump it off to 23. Like they did that at the end of the Green Bay game. Just get it to him a couple times. I just sit there and say, well, throw it to 23, throw it to 23, run it to 23, run left. This could just be one of those. Don't get too cute. Just go, just give it to your best player. Run him behind your other best player, number 71.
Right. Yeah, I mean, how many games this season at the end of the game would you have said that Christian McCaffrey was the MVP of the game? I mean, at least half a dozen of them. I mean, the two Cardinals game where he had, you know, four touchdowns. He's had over 100 yards sometimes. Absolutely, that is a scenario in play. I will say that I was part of a Steve Spagnuolo scrum on Monday, and he said that, you know, when you first start watching film of the 49ers offense, your eye immediately goes to number 23. So they think that Christian McCaffrey is going to be the epicenter of that offense. So I don't know, does Kyle Shanahan then you know, move his chess pieces around and go in a different direction? He's done that. I mean, when he thinks that a defense is keying in on one area, he will immediately go to a different area. And he has the option to do that. But I sort of agree with you. I mean, why not give it to your best, your best weapon out there, a guy that you're going to be 100% sure is ready and eager to have a spectacular game.
I also, the only one, Deebo Samuel, right? That's when the 49ers are in trouble. Shanahan figures a way to get it to 19, you know, in the open field, like he did in the, you know, Detroit game, right? First play, I think, of the third, whatever it was, like just throw it to 19, see him do something. And you could, you know, the dream has been McCaffrey fake right, throw it to Deebo left, fake to Deebo left, give it to McCaffrey right. I could see, I don't know. I mean, Elijah Mitchell, like, played well last game, but I can just see the carries that McCaffrey doesn't get, it's going to be Deebo, or at least going to be the short passes that feel like a running game. Big game, Deebo Samuel, go do something. That just feels like something I could see. I'm not saying he'd be the MVP, but I could just see like six plays where Shanahan has said, I am just going to get this guy the ball. We've seen it in so many big games, and the fun is to send, you know, make the defense have to think about one of them, and you give it to the other one.
You know, we're talking about energy and, you know, just kind of creating that, you know, intense atmosphere that has been lacking the last two games. Who creates that better than Deebo Samuel? I mean, it was Deebo Samuel in Philadelphia that helped sort of create that just aggressive atmosphere that they had going into that game. That's what they need going into the Chiefs game. They need somebody pumping them up. You know, sticking out his chest. I was about to say getting into fights with kickers in pregame, but like just towing the line. You don't want to get tossed out of the game before it begins. But I do think that they need that level of intensity. And if they have that plus all of their talent, that's how you beat Patrick Mahomes. I likened it to your favorite movie, Avengers Endgame. If they can assemble, then they can beat the big baddie at the very end and take the ring off of his finger. Not bad, huh?
That's pretty good. You got Ocean's 11, you got Avengers Endgame. Like, these are two pretty good movie references. I don't know, the whole carrot top thing threw me off at the beginning. these are two good ones. Okay, we've talked about how the 49ers can win this game. I think I'm picking them. I haven't written that column yet, but I think I am picking them. We'll see. Okay, I could change my mind. Do reserve that right. But how do they lose this game then? What happens in a scenario where the 49ers lose?
I mean, you could see several scenarios. You could see a scenario where they're winning or it's a close game, and then one Patrick Mahomes has the ball in his hand at the end of the game, and then works his Patrick Mahomes magic. Maybe gets a pass interference or defensive holding call to help him out. We would never hear the end of it if that happened. But I mean, that's, you know, I think we've talked about this in the past where, you know, this scenario that the 49ers have played with these last two games where it's disjointed and they fall behind early and this, that, and the other. And it's difficult to watch, and you come away with it, with a sort of unsatisfied feeling if you're a fan, even though your team has won. In a way, that could be good, because in the second half, you're the pursuer. You're the aggressor. You're the one who's going for it on fourth down. You're the one who's got the ball in your guy's hand, in Brock Purdy's hand, at the end of the game instead of the other way around. I mean, there is something to be said about that, and just the rhythm of a game and how you want to be the one that is, pushing the limits, pushing it at game's end. So I don't know if it's going to play out that way. The first two playoff games certainly have suggested it could happen that way, but that's certainly one scenario.
Yeah, the way I'm looking at it, this might even be my lead. I'm thinking, like, the 49ers only had one way to win that game 4 years ago, and they almost did it. Like, they had to control the ball. They had to limit what Garoppolo was going to throw, have him hit a few big ones if they could, and play great defense. Like, that was it. And they were up 20-10, and then it busted loose, and they didn't have the offensive firepower to change that. Raheem Mostert had a great postseason. He wasn't the guy who was going to change that. I think he only got, like, two carries once the Chiefs started scoring. They just didn't have that. And now they've got a few ways. They could play it that way. I don't think they're as good defensively. But with McCaffrey, you can play that physical ball, offensively at least, get out to a lead and then just hold on this time. We'll see. Or they could go wide open and just start flinging it around and try to win. You know, I don't think they could have won in a high-scoring game 4 years ago. I mean, they clearly didn't. They lost 31-20. But I think they could open it up and get down 10, come back, get it up, you know, like in one of those weird Super Bowl games we've seen. I think this quarterback can do that. Christian McCaffrey can do that. Mature Ayuk, a mature Debo. I think they can do this. Kittle. I just see more ways for them to win. And doesn't mean they're going to. And Patrick Mahomes is very, very hard to beat. He did lose in the Super Bowl, though. It's not like he's Joe Montana and can't lose in the Super Bowl. He has lost in the Super Bowl. If you throw the right defense at them, we'll see if the 49ers should have the personnel to do it. We'll see if they can do it. But I do think they have more ways to win. I think the Chiefs actually have less ways to win without Tyreek Hill. I respect their defense. It was good in the Super Bowl 4 years ago. It's better now. Chris Jones is a problem, but I don't know that they're great. And I think the 49ers should be able to move the ball on them. Certainly if they get down and get desperate, they shouldn't be able to throw some passes on them, run the ball on them. I do think it's been dwindled down. And I think the 49ers have this pathway that they can go either way, run, pass, whatever. And I see them winning this game. I'm going to call it here. I'm going to pick them. I think I'm not going to change my mind. You convinced me. I'm going to pick the 49ers. I mean, I don't love the pick. Again, Patrick Mahomes and a good defense is a great combination to win a lot of Super Bowls. And they've already won a lot of Super Bowls. Or two at least, and this could be their third. I just think this might be the 49ers time. This might be it. And it doesn't mean that the window's shutting, but I think this might be their moment because they can win a bunch of different ways. And you need to go into Super Bowl feeling that. They could have won it very basic way 4 years ago, but then it showed the vulnerability of that showed. Patrick Mahomes could go crazy on them, but I think they can hold that down. I think they can score enough. About Barros, you want to offer anything like that? I'm not going to force you to make a pick, but.
Oh, I'm just going to follow that up. Does it bother you that on this Avengers level 49ers team, Spider-Man is a rookie kicker? Who, by the way, missed two kicks in Allegiant Stadium to kick off the season. Back in the preseason, Jake Moody was 0-2 there. Strange back then. I mean, we're seeing why everybody thought it was so strange in April that, okay, this team that thought it was going to go to the Super Bowl, picked a rookie kicker to be potentially kicking the game winner in that game. I mean, here we are. It's all of those scenarios that we put forth. Okay, what if this happens? They're happening right now.
Yes, yes. That is, like, I think I'm factoring in he's going to miss one. Like, I'm factoring that in because he's missed one in each of the first two playoff games. The Chiefs, Harrison Butker is great. I factor him. He's going to make whatever he's attempting. That is an issue. And if it comes down to what you think 49ers with a 41-yard field goal attempt to either win or lose this game in the final seconds, here we are, Jake Moody. I don't know that Kyle's going to feel great about that. In fact, they might be going for it on some fourth downs, I have a feeling. Like fourth and two, fourth, and he doesn't tend to go fourth and four, fourth and six, but fourth and two, I can see him going for it at the 33, you know, the 32, whatever. I could just feel that, but I'm kind of factoring that in. Like a mediocre kicker, I'm kind of factoring. If they had a great kicker, I would feel a lot better about picking the 49ers, but I don't think kicker, you know, it's hard to measure what, you know, certainly Adam Vinatieri was massive for the Patriots, but not for every Super Bowl. Like some Super Bowls, the kicker does not come into play that much. If Moody can just kick it into the end zone on kickoffs, which he has failed to do a time or two, I think that's a key point. Like it wasn't strategy for him to kick short against Green Bay. He just missed it and it went short and he went back for a long kickoff return. Like this is a guy who can still miss kicks, but if he only misses one and he has three attempts and he makes all his extra points, I'm just kind of baking that into who the 49ers are. I'm not counting on a 53-yarder to win the game, put it that way, or even a 48-yarder to win the game. Just not. And that Allegiant Field, that's where it started with Moody, right? That's where the shakiness started with him. You had this dominant training camp. We're all going, man, that is as good as I've ever seen a kicker in a training camp. And then Allegiant, like he pulls one left and then he pushes one right. And they're like, here we go. And, you know, I think they're trying to talk themselves into not feeling worried about it. I bet you they're a little worried about it, but I don't know that a kick, again, could be wrong. Kick might come down to it, but I don't know that that's what it's going to be. And I'm just kind of counting that as part of the factoring and why I still kind of like the 49ers in this. I still do like the 49ers in this game, but it's a big thing. It's definitely a big thing. Robbie Gould would feel pretty good for the 49ers right now. I know I understood why they did it. I think they'd feel pretty good if Robbie Gould was their place kicker right now.
Someone said they saw Robbie Gould down here on the strip walking around. It's Robbie Gould and Carrot Top.
If he's at practice today.
I mean, if Jake Moody has a shaky first half and Robbie's there in the stands, I say he comes climbing out of the stands and then puts on his old uniform and kicks the game winner. What a Hollywood story that
there
would
be. There we
go. That'd be dream better than Ocean's 11.
Dream.
What was Robbie's number with the 49ers?
Six, I think. Yeah. I think it was six.
We'll call it Ocean's Six, and it'll kill in the box office. Don Cheadle, Carrot Top, the works.
Barros, you're in there. You're in this group. You are in the Rat Pack. Okay. I'm putting you in there. You're connecting them all. All right. Any good meals out there so far, Barros?
Yeah, I had a good one last night at Libertine, which is in the Mandalay Bay Casino. I had a good fish. I was kind of nervous about it. Fish can not be good in restaurants or kind of taste the same. This was out of this world. This was worth the price. So that's been the all-star so far. Hoping to have one with you, our normal night before the game dinner. Maybe we'll get Marcus night. And David to come too. So we should plan on something nice Saturday night to sort of celebrate the season, win, lose, or draw the next day.
We'll do it. Matt Barros has called it. We'll find someplace good to eat. I don't know. Sometimes it's hard to get MT out to eat, but we will invite him. We'll get Lombardi. We'll do it up. A little the Athletic Bay Area style. Excellent. Excellent idea. We'll report back on it after the Super Bowl. We'll tell you how it went. Barros, got anything else to say here?
That's it. I'm going to be heading to Lake Las Vegas later this afternoon, and we'll get a better idea of George Kittle's availability. Who else? Ambry Thomas has an ankle. Eric Armstead. And we'll also figure out if they practiced in full, a regular Thursday practice at UNLV.
And if Robbie Gould is at a podium, you will let us know. debriefing. That's pretty good. That's better than the coyote sighting. It's Robbie Gould walking along in Vegas. Wow. Wow. You write that one up. You'll get some people reading it. I'll tell you that one.
That's true. That's true.
Blind to that. All right, Barrows. Thanks so much. I will see you tomorrow or Saturday and certainly on Sunday when we got ourselves a ball.
Sounds good.